Thoroughbreds, every single one, primed for the race, every muscle pumped, groomed in expensive, understated designer grey or navy suits, classic white shirts, black robes. All these top legal women have a sort of swagger, an ironic way of owning the space, a satchel flung from one shoulder to the opposite hip. Nude or red lipstick, not too much mascara, cool earrings and designer boots, or cheeky heels bought on a trip overseas. I study them all, have done so for years, copy them. I'm a good mimic. Eventually I become better at being a barrister than the ones born to it. The top women do law differently to the men, subtly different, and it takes a while for me to compute the various ways they own the space. All the little details, a secret code for we're here but we're doing it our way, not like the crusty old male barristers of the past. And these details accumulate the more confident you become, the more you own your space in court. Barrister bags in pink or blue are placed around the court like loyal dogs beside their owners. Blue for baby barristers of fewer than 20 years. The pink ones are a badge of honour given to a junior barrister by a KC who has singled them out for praise. I was granted a pink one and I treasure it, but I use mine more ironically than anything else. Soft, thick, white ropes of a certain length and texture act as handles, blazoned with hand-stitched initials in the only font permitted and lined with court-approved ticking. A barrister bag was once a thing of pride, supposed to be used for carrying briefs and materials for court. They might have been useful centuries ago, but now really they're for show. Symbols of the elite, handed down from father to son. Sometimes a daughter received her father's bag. But those barristers, the women who grew up with law in the family, they don't have the same uncomfortable relationship with these things that I do. They don't love the law like I do either. They don't see it as a tool for power in the way I always have. Don't hold it tight. Sure, they know it's powerful, but most slipped into the law as if settling into an old leather armchair and think of it more as a family business, not a desperate arena to fight for justice. It's easy to pick these women. They mostly don't do criminal law, nothing grubby, nothing risky. If they do opt for a criminal practice, it's usually a tame version and often chosen more out of curiosity than life experience, more for the excitement than the desire to fight for clients on the lowest rungs of social standing. For those of us beyond the barrister bag accoutrements, the satchel is a much better statement, confident, unfazed, a symbol of having made it well past the need for a security blanket, our own little badge of honour. Yet there are some things we all have in common. The horsehair wigs that cover our well-cut, warmly coloured styles that give all women barristers the same unfortunate case of 6 p.m. wig hair at the end of a long day. Something the male forebears didn't account for when they enshrined it as a legal costume. The only way the men can differentiate from each other is the colour of their tie. Occasionally one might add unusual glasses or an interesting watch. In a glance, I can tell who's who in the court foyer, what cases they have run, won, lost, what cases are listed today. If it's a certain group of barristers, then it's all white-collar crime in corporate finance cases. Their instructing solicitors trail behind them with trolleys of white binders. And then there are those of us who ride the lifts to the criminal courts. We circle, heads held high, all of us trained and ready for the sprint. Not jumpy, but wired like a horse, excited, restless, waiting for the starting gun. The first to break loses. I walk into court with my client, take in a rabble of police leaning into the prosecution barrister. Arnold Lathan is prosecuting. Good, I'm glad it's him. Dare I say, this is now perhaps a winnable case. I nod to Arnold briefly, and he nods back. My blood rises, but I have to keep it together. Don't get too excited. Arnold's always prepared. He's just not as quick once things unfold. I don't recognise any of the police. That's also good. They have no idea what to expect. My client is lagging, Tony. He's a tall, big guy. This isn't the first time I've acted for him, but it's the first time on a matter like this. The charge of stealing and assault is based entirely on the evidence of one man, someone Tony once played football with, a compromised witness with a major grudge against him. He dislikes Tony, looks down on him, and has made a statement that leaves out the abuse and assault Tony endured at this man's hands. The police clearly believe the man's story, so here we are. Tony is dressed as I told him, but he still doesn't cut it. A suit from Primark, a cheap no-brand shirt, and a tie he must have got free with the shirt. Still, at least he tried. He's hidden all his tats under that layer of polyester. Good. It's always a shock to me when these tough guys are about to walk into a court. They're unexpectedly nervous. Antonia's no different. Out there they run the streets, confident, cocky, reading all the signs, but in here the signals are different, and each of them say, you have no power. I told Tony to bring a toothbrush, and he told me this morning that he actually did. He pulled it out of his pocket, a blue Tesco's brand, with some fluff from the pocket of his new jacket layering the bristles. No, Tony, it's just a saying. But you told me, it's just lawyer talk. His eyes are glued to my lips, trying to work out what I'm saying. I explain it. It means the cops have a good case. But you said, Tony, they won't actually let you take your toothbrush into prison with you. They won't. He's scanning me for any sort of hope. Don't panic just yet. Tony is scared, like little boy scared. Of course he is. For him, this is not an everyday thing, not a familiar place. He's been up all night drinking and vomiting. He's had to iron that shirt and ask his girlfriend or his mum to put the tie on for him. He probably caught the train in and ate Mackey D's around the corner, not knowing where he'd spend the next night. This is big. He could go away for a few years if he goes down. The truth is, keeping them afraid is actually useful. They listen more, tend to be a bit in awe of you, and it acts as a buffer in case they go down. It means once they know jail is possible, you're all they have. If we walk out of here today, I am his favourite person. If he goes inside, it won't be a shock. I can see so much of my brother in Tony, out of place in a terrible situation that looks like it can only get worse. I head over to him. Hey, Tony. As he hurries to stand up, I see he's sweating. You okay? Yeah, yeah. Anyone coming here to be with you? His tongue moistens his lips. He's just 25. Mum's on her way. Good. I'm the only thing familiar in this room. There is laughter from a group of barristers, another calling loudly for his client. Confidence and power surround Tony, but he has none of it. His eyes are soft, and for the first time since I met him, he has neither gum nor cigarette in his mouth. I see the child in him, not the arsehole in the public brief, the thug who drank too much, lost his cool, and is in over his head. Do you think there's any hope your witness will arrive? He has an ex-girlfriend who witnessed it all, saw that it was not Tony who threw the first punch. Dunno, maybe. Shall I call her again? Yeah, you do that. Tell her we're in the list for 10 a.m. I know there's no hope. She's been AWOL for the last month. Truth is, she doesn't want anything to do with this case. She's scared to give evidence. No one likes to be cross-examined. At least calling her will give Tony something to do as he waits for his mum. And it gives me a chance to review the main points. A trip to the loo, straighten my wig and makeup. When Tony takes his seat in court, he pulls the chair up to the bar table beside me. I have to reprimand him. I turn to him and explain he's to sit in the dock and direct him over to the court officer. He complies meekly. He's shaking. The man described in the police brief as a dangerous, violent, drunken thug in a bar is this scared 25-year-old shaking like a boy. The narratives do not reconcile. This is the truth of the law.